Alcoholic. I'm usually not a nervous type because I'm so full of myself, but I was just asked literally minutes ago, so I generally, when I'm asked to speak, I like to freak out for more than a couple of days beforehand instead of just 5 minutes. It's very strange. I don't know what happened. anyway, my sobriety date is somewhere about June 14th. I'm pretty sure it's June 14th. I'm not precisely sure because I was still drinking and things are a little foggy. 2007, and that was not my first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a couple of vacation stops here and there before then, and I got my first glimpse of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 19 years old, and I liked it all right. It was okay, and it did wonders for me for a little bit, and then drinking seemed a lot better at times. And so I continued to improve upon my story for a little bit and had some other stops in Alcoholics Anonymous for periods of time. Some were longer than a year, and I decided again that I probably would be better off drinking because sober was too hard. And what happened to me was is that I got sober and I got excited about Alcoholics Anonymous, but then I just was showing up and I really wasn't doing anything. And life's hard, man, when you're sober and you're not doing nothing. You know, it's just kind of things creep up on you and it's real hard to deal with things. I have a hard time dealing with things naturally, you know, and let alone trying to live up to something and not being able to. And what happened to me was when I was a kid, I was talking to somebody earlier that did not experience this, but I did. Was I never felt like I fit in anywhere. I always felt like I was the ugly duckling. And not much has changed, I guess, but, you know, I do the best I can. And I had these big ears and these big teeth when I was three, you know, and I just recently grew into them. And I always say that because it was just kind of part of my story. And I have a friend of mine that's heard my story over and over again, and I think he's tired of it because he doesn't go to the same meetings as me anymore. But he came to my house one day and he saw a picture of me when I was three and he says, "Man, you weren't lying." You know, that's for sure. And I felt that. That's how I felt too. My whole life as a kid, I just felt like I didn't fit in and everybody was staring at me and I didn't like that. And so I had reactions to that that weren't favorable for me. And I ended up in programs and people, my parents tried desperately to help me out and they never could find anything that would suit me, you know, and they tried to put me in a advanced learning program because they thought maybe I was too smart and I was, you know, above everything and that's why I was acting out. And I was in that advanced program for a week and they found out that wasn't the problem at all. And so they put me in a pioneering program in Pinellas County at the time, and it was for the emotionally handicapped, and there was three of us in the school, you know. And all I was trying to do was to fit in, and they take me out of general population and put me in this private room, and that was the one thing I really didn't need. Because when I got out of that room, everybody was making fun of me, and I got the attention I didn't want, and it didn't work out. But, you know, my story is that I hear a lot of heartbreaking stories, man, and they are sad, and it's inspirational where they came from and where they are now. I don't have that story because I come from a good family. I don't want to steal the next speaker's thunder, but I have the same thing that he says is my case, is that I have no real excuse for myself. You know, my parents gave me everything I needed and everything I wanted and then some. You know, and I have a brother that's fairly normal, you know, and he's been successful. He's had three successful marriages, and he's done well in his job and things like that. And so we're two different people. And I've been to jail a lot, and I've been to detoxes and hospitals from drinking and stuff like that. And all those consequences that people talk about, they pretty much have happened to me. And the problem with consequences is they seem like they're real. You think you'd get over something if you have the consequences I'd have. But I got used to them, you know. And in Pinellas County Jail, when I went the first time when I was 18, it was scary and horrible. And I think I cried. And I called my dad up and I said, "My God, this is terrible and scary and horrible. You have to get me out of here." And he goes, "How much is it?" I said, $50. And he said, "Well, I think you found a way to get in there. You'll probably find a way to get out." And I'm like, "My God, what am I going to do? This is terrible. There's lots of big, mean people here. You know, I don't belong here, a guy like me." And I ended up going, I probably got arrested, over 20 times, you know. And I kept on going. By the last time I went there, I thought, "God, this isn't that bad." they have two TVs now, you know, and they have this room that's like an airport, and it's nice, you know, so it's not that bad. It's not that big of a deal, and they don't have bars on the rooms or anything like that, so you have a bunk mate, you know, and it was nice. So I got used to things like that. And towards the me coming in June of 2007, I was spinning out and detoxes and freaking out and not doing so well, and I didn't have a regular paying job for several years, and I went to this one detox, and I called this guy, and you know, it's funny, you AA people that stay sober, you tend to keep the same phone number, which is nice, you know, because us, when we're drinking, we get different phone numbers because we can't pay our bills, and we get a burner or this or that, and we have all these things going on, and this guy had the same phone number, and I lost my phone, and so it was the only phone number I could remember, and I was in a tight spot 70 miles away from my house, and I had no way home, and I spent all my money, and I didn't have anything, and I said, man, this is an AA guy, and nothing. Them AA guys are suckers, you know, especially for a sad story, you know, and I had lots of those, and I called him up, and I said, man, I really want to stop drinking, and I didn't. I just wanted a ride home, and he said, well, I'll come and get you, and he came all the way, probably half the distance, to come get me and take me the full distance back there. And his intention was, you know, you need help, man. You need to go to a detox. And it's funny, you know, I kind of was, in the back of my head, I was kind of interested in getting sober a little. And but when you're actually going to get sober and someone's taking you there, you change your mind a lot, you know. And I was like, no, I was just kidding. I'm okay. I'll sleep it off. You know, just take me to this house, you know. And he dropped me off at a place in Zephyr Hills, the barracks. And I sat there and I cried this sad story, and you know, I a lot of things happen to me when I get drunk. I cry, I get hot and sleepy, you know, and so generally I cry a lot, and I take my clothes off and sleep behind a 7-Eleven, and they pick me up. I went to jail a lot on that, you know, and nothing violent or anything. And so he takes me there, and you know, he always answered the phone no matter what, and I didn't stay sober, you know, and he took me to detox more than once. And when I got sober, I called him up, and I said, Brian, why? Well, I got to tell you something. I really do. I'm really sorry. That night that you came down to the Clearwater Beach and picked me up and took me to Zephyr Hills, I was kind of hustling you. I really didn't want to get sober, you know. And he said something back to me, and he says, you know, I need to apologize to you too. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, I know. You know, I said, what do you mean you know? And you still did it anyway. And he said, yeah. He goes, his sponsor and a lot of other people were telling him, you know, why are you messing with this guy? He's never going to get better. He's just going to drag you down. And he told me, and he doesn't say a lot of profound things, but it was one of the most profound things he said, was he said to me that, you know, I have a feeling that maybe someday you're going to get it. And I'd like to be part of that, because there's nothing more exciting in Alcoholics Anonymous to see someone finally get it, you know. And that's what he told me. I think he probably was lying, but it sounded good at the time, you know. So, but, you know, and that's how I feel, man, is it's like, I'm glad that there was a few people that never gave up on me, because I was, what do they call it, a retread or whatever. I was one of them guys that came in and out, and I needed some attention or $5 or, you know, a place to stay or something like that. And I was pretty much hustling everyone, mainly myself. But I think that I have this thing. I see a couple guys that, since I've been around, that you looked at them and you said, man, they're having a hard time like me. And you see them get it, and there's nothing like that. There really isn't. When I'm feeling bad and I'm thinking about myself all the time, which is one of my hobbies, you know, and I think it's never going to get better and I'm going to be a retread again, you know, I think about that, you know, I really didn't think I was ever going to get sober. I really didn't think it was going to happen for me. And I got to a place in June of 2007 where I didn't have nowhere else to go. And that was it. And I really still didn't think I was going to get sober. And I met a couple guys that believed not only in me, but they believed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I saw that it worked for them. And I had a little inspiration from a bunch of guys that would never give up on me. You know, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, and they turned me on to the real Alcoholics Anonymous, the steps, the things that happen to someone like me, and that you need to have happen. I need to have something happen, and I need to have it happen now. You know, and so when I got into the steps, something started to change. And I got home after we did a fourth and fifth step, and I felt something for the first time. I was one of those guys that, you know, I don't know. Maybe I was atheist. I don't know. That sounds like agnostic, doesn't it? But I was probably atheist. You know, I really was sure that there was nothing, and nothing could save me. You know, and something saved me. I was in desperate need of a miracle, and when I got home that night, something came about me, and the sixth and seventh step kind of happened, and I had a miracle. You know, and so I got here, and there was just a bunch of people that the only thing that they wanted to do was they just wanted to love me, and I thought that was weird. I never was. I'm not someone that would say that. You know, that kind of gives me ooh. Can you believe that guy just said that? But that's what they did, man. And I needed that because I sure hated myself. I always thought I was strong, and you know, and I didn't need none of that gushy stuff or anything like that. And that's what I needed, you know. And kind of my deal is that you know, I was one of those guys that was lost. And I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a little story, and I'm done because those signs freak me out. So I got about 1 minute left, and it's okay, it's me, not you. And I have this little nephew. Well, he's not little anymore; he's 16 or so. But when he was three, we took him to a baseball game, and my brother kind of gave me the authority position for that night. And, you know, my little nephew looked up to me, and I think all little kids have that in them. You know, they have an adult figure that's in their life, and, you know, they look up to them, and they get that security, and they feel comfortable, and they get some sort of direction from them, and they feel that it's going to be all right. Their dad doesn't have to be around or anything, and they kind of, you know, maybe I was like Uncle God for tonight, you know, kind of that same thing, you know, where you get that direction. Every person has that inside of them, you know, that childlike feeling of the idea of God. And he was kind of looking at me for his direction and security and things like that. We get to this baseball game, and we're running around, and he's running around. He's having a great time, and he's getting cotton candy, and he's having a wonderful time. And you can see it on his face, you know, and he's just loving life, and he feels safe and having a good time. And he starts to run up these stairs all the way up, you know, and all of a sudden he turns around, and I still am not in the shape you can see. I don't run upstairs, you know. So I'm standing there, and I'm looking at him, and I turn around, and he can't see me because the crowd starts to get into the steps and everything, and they get in the way. And he turns around, and all of a sudden, fear comes on his face, and he's terrified, and he can't believe what has happened to him. He's lost, and he can't see Uncle God, you know. And that's kind of what happened to me, is I always had a little feeling inside of me that there's something out there that's giving me security and protection, and I'm going to be all right. But what, I just put my head down, and I start running the other way, and I turn around, and I go, my God, where is God? You know, and I heard in a meeting one time, a lady said, you know, you can stop saying you're looking for God, honey, because God ain't lost. You know, you are. And what happened to me was the steps kind of got in the way for me and pushed the crowd out of the way, and I needed that to happen for sure. And I got a glimpse of what Alcoholics Anonymous had to offer me, and that was an idea of God. Thank you.